You're listening to the Data Flowcast, the podcast about Apache Airflow and the world of data and AI around it. We are excited to invite you to Orchestrate Everything, our free online conference on September 16th. Engineering leaders from Lyft, Ramp, and Wix will share how they're shipping production AI workflows on Airflow, plus a crash course for the new Astronomer Certified AI Orchestration Fundamentals exam. Attendees get a discount code for a free certification, a $150 value. Go to astronomer.link/data-flowcast-oe, link in the show notes. Now, let's get into the show.
Okay, hi everyone. Welcome to the Data Flowcast. I'm your host, Kenton Danis, and today I'm joined by Antonello Benedetto, who is a staff data engineer at Wise. Antonello, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for the invite, Kenton. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Thank you so much for joining. We'll go ahead and dive in. So for today's podcast, we're going to talk about how Wise uses Airflow and some of their insight around things like managing data reliability and LLM-enabled workflows. I think this is going to be really useful to our listeners. And before we get into some of those details, I want to start with a little bit of background. So tell me about Wise, what the company does, and what you do there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Wise can be seen as a technology company, and we are helping our customers, you know, moving money across borders, but also holding money in 40 different currencies, you know, via Wise account and Wise business. And, you know, like we are also selling and, you know, allowing, you know, big companies and banks to use our technologies via Wise platform and offer the same services we use to our customers, to their existing customer base. And just to give you some numbers, Kenton, in the fiscal year 2026, we supported 19 million customers to move $240 billion across border, and we saved around $3 billion in fees. So it's quite an effort there, and it keeps growing, and we keep, you know, saving money to our customers. That's great.
That's great. That's so impactful. What a huge amount of customers and money that you're helping with. Yeah,
indeed,
very cool
indeed.
To hear about. And so tell me more about then what you do at the company and what is your role?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm currently serving as a staff analytics engineer in the central data and analytics engineering team. And really what I do is coordinating technical you know, projects across multiple engineering teams. Particularly, I collaborate very closely with platform engineering and with security engineering, security ops, and the purpose is serving analytics, you know, at you know, according to our best standards, and so like is mainly a role as an individual contributor. But before that, I used to lead the data engineering effort within finance and treasury. So I was working very closely with Airflow and you know, analytical pipelines orchestrated via Airflow in finance and treasury to start with.
Yeah, great. And maybe if you can tell me in a little bit more detail about the kinds of problems that your central analytics engineering team is working on. And you mentioned using Airflow, and so where does Airflow fit into those problems?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can see, you can look at the central data and analytics engineering team as a sort of hybrid team. So I will define ourselves as a part platform team, because we own actually the infrastructure, the tooling, and the services that actually power our, you know, analytics and reporting offering. For example, we own directly DBT infrastructure, BI infrastructure within Wise, and you know, more recently, analytics MCPs as a service. To empower people to use AI, you know, locally. And on the other side, we work as, you know, analytics engineers, data engineers, managing ETL pipelines, you know, on behalf of tribes. In particular, we manage, you know, a pretty small amount of critical data sets that, you know, are orchestrated with Airflow natively. And the reason why they are critical is because they are highly referenced, you know, downstream by thousands, I would say, of dbt models. Airflow is actually on top of this orchestration. So like it's a, as I said, a hybrid team, and every analytics engineer in our team is embedded in a tribe, so they are contributing to the work and technical initiatives within a tribe, say finance, servicing, treasury, marketing, as well as contributing to central projects. So in this way, people working in our team, really have an opportunity to work across, a very wide range of problems and get experience, on the pure data engineering role, as well as, also having exposure to platform work. That is quite empowering.
Yeah, that's very cool. And so I'd love to get a little bit more insight from you on kind of the principles that your team works with. You mentioned that you're managing these critical data sets. And in my experience, finance companies or anybody dealing with financial data are obviously very highly regulated, very sensitive information, and a very high bar for the data quality, because if it's wrong, that's going to have a huge negative impact on your customers. So when you're working with Airflow and these pipelines that help you manage this data, kind of what principles guide how your team thinks about, making sure that those workflows are maintainable and that they're producing reliable data?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, actually, and your point about like us being a financial, like a fintech company, and being quite regulated is spot on. I would say there are three principles that come to mind while managing pipelines. First one is a net separation in between computation and orchestration logic. So I've seen in the past, people using Airflow in a way that is mixing the two components, whereas I believe a well-structured, like Airflow instance is one where, let's say, the DAG skeleton and the DAG sort of components are kept separate from like the Python logic that gets executed via Airflow. Airflow at the end of the day is like an orchestration tool. And this allows us to actually maintain the code much more easily, make it more readable, because it separates the two pieces of logic completely. And also it allows us to touch the least amount of, let's say, files as possible while fixing a bug, for example, because either the bug is identified in the orchestration portion or in the computation portion. So this is like an extremely important principle for us to keep modularity and keep our pipelines reliable. The second principle is that we are really computationally aware as a team. So we know again that the strength of Airflow relies in the orchestration, despite really you could do everything with Airflow with a little bit of creativity. We know that at our scale, we cannot really rely on Airflow, and we cannot really bombard Airflow with memory-intense tasks. So memory-intensive tasks are usually redistributed to external workers, being that on AWS EMR or SageMaker, keeping Airflow tasks really light. And because Airflow has such a great integration with all these external tools, it's so easy to actually develop the orchestration portion and deliver the job or the task somewhere else to be executed. So like the last principle is making standardizing a lot how Airflow is deployed centrally, but keeping the flexibility for stakeholders. And what I mean is migrating to a new Airflow version initially required quite a lot of effort, because we were all using different deployments of the Docker image, whereas more recently we moved to Python, to using Python Virtual Environment Operator. And this means that basically we can deploy a standardized version across all our Airflow instances by keeping the flexibility for the analysts or data scientists downstream. So they can create their own environment. They can choose what Python package they need, what type of environment they want to create, without impacting on anyone else. So they are pretty isolated as a job. So in this way, we make platform engineering happy and also stakeholders happy at the same time. So I would say these three principles are really guiding us.
Got it. That's great that you've been able to implement that sort of standardization while also still giving teams a lot of flexibility in how they're using Airflow. I think sometimes those things can be a little bit mutually exclusive at some companies, and it makes it really hard for data engineers to, try and find the best way of doing things. So it sounds like you've hit.
Absolutely, Kenton, because if you wish, our role is, let's say, translating, technical concepts coming from platform to something that, less technical stakeholders can digest, as well as on the other side, translating business requirement into automation. So I will define our team sometimes as a translator team, an intermediate team that is acting as a sort of, let's say, that is fostering communication in between pure platform engineering and analytics function itself.
Yeah, very cool. And I want to talk a little bit more about the reliability aspect of the data management that you're doing. I know a lot of engineering teams use some form of tiering to try and figure out, I guess, what sort of level the data is at and how accurate and how clean it is. So, how do you think about prioritizing the reliability for these, critical or high impact data sets that you've mentioned?
Absolutely. So, first of all, at Wise, I would say, particularly in our team, we can distinguish three flavors of pipelines. We have like the pure Python DAG in Airflow. Then we have like the dbt sort of DAG and what I call hybrid DAGs. So, those DAGs that run both dbt pure tasks as well as Python tasks. This gives us quite a lot of flexibility, and over time, we built, we know, we ended up managing these pipelines that are highly reliable and highly referenced. And we had to introduce a tiering system centrally, and the tiering system is needed to distinguish those highly reliable, highly controlled pipelines from like new pipelines, right? So those pipelines that are under development. Generally, what that means is that high-tier pipelines are also highly controlled, and they are also, they are also extremely well documented, and also observability on those is much stricter and more stringent. But generally, let's say all pipelines can be moved up in tier by allowing people to, let's say, understand what is missing to move from a lower tier to an higher tier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And so to make sure I'm understanding correctly, so it's maybe let the tiering is less about the data that is being produced or managed by the pipeline, but about the pipeline code itself. And so how kind of ready is it to produce something that is trusted in production?
Absolutely. So
Interesting.
it's about the infrastructure behind the pipelines, the level of controls being implemented on top of the pipeline itself. And also, do we have metadata about the owner? Do we let's say do we Do we have SLAs about a specific pipeline? Did we agree them with a specific team? Has it been running for a long time, or is it just a new effort, right? And you can have two pipelines in two different teams, like that we own centrally, that meet the same very high standards and tier, but they are serving two different purposes, right? So, some of them have certain SLAs because we reached specific agreements with stakeholders, and others might have like different SLAs. So the real question that we answer is what's the use case? What does the customer require? In principle, and how quickly do we need to let's say, fix the pipeline in case it breaks. So this is a real question. And this imposes different SLAs, but the tiering system is standardized. And as I was saying, our guidelines on how to, let's say, promote pipelines to higher systems tiering are really transparent, and we encourage analysts downstream to also look at these improvements constantly.
Yeah, that's a cool methodology. And I'm curious, do you have a sense of how much time typically it takes for, if say somebody is doing like a totally new pipeline for a new use case, for them to move up into kind of the highest tier of reliability? Or are there some pipelines that never get to that highest tier because they don't need to be? Or what does that look like?
It's pretty much, let's say, there is like a sort of, it comes both ways. There are some pipelines that will never, reach that top tier level because it's not needed, right? So it's not needed. The effort is not needed downstream. The let's say perhaps the customer, the stakeholder is not requiring that level of complexity, that level of efficiency and controls. And there are other pipelines that naturally are pushed upper and upper because there's probably a requirement coming from below. And usually requirements coming from below tend to speed up the process of pushing the tier up. But we also centrally, we tend to encourage analysts to move and promote pipelines to higher tiers when possible.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I love learning about that. That is a pattern that I don't think I've heard about before, but it totally makes
Good.
sense for a way of standardizing internally, especially around that sensitive data. So, yeah, that's great to hear.
And then as we Kent, and also to add to that, as we build a semantic layer, of course, having pipelines that are already a top tier pipelines gives us sort of foundational sort of information on what should be queried, like where good quality data comes from, where we should retrieve information to start with, right? So it gives us a good foundational layer on top of which we can keep building, right? On top of which we can keep building downstream dbt models as well as LLM applications, for example, right?
This episode is brought to you by Astronomer, the team behind Astro, a managed airflow platform built for data engineering teams. From batch pipelines to training models and wiring up agents, Astro handles the infrastructure, upgrades, and scaling so you can focus on building. Check it out at astronomer.io.
Changing topics a little bit, I also want to talk about the LLM enabled workflows that you've been working on, since this is, of course, a very hot topic right now and something I think a lot of teams are grappling with. This is a big, emerging area for orchestration. So, at a high level, again, thinking about the principles that you're using, again, within the context of working with some very sensitive data, what do you think that teams should keep in mind when they're experimenting with, adding LLMs into their workflows or orchestrating agents or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question because, at once we've been experimenting with LLM-enabled workflows indeed. And of course, on the surface, an LLM, let's say, workflow orchestrated via Airflow might look very similar to a standard pipeline, but actually, it's not, right? Because what changes is the sort of let's say control being applied on top of the pipeline itself. So if a standard pipeline is using standard controls, right, on code or tests or unit tests or integration tests, when we let's say talk about LLM enabled workflows, we look more at validation layers. So building validation layers for specific use cases. That are basically, sense checking what the LLM has generated as an output, as well as having also observability platform, as well as an evaluation platform, that instead of looking at a specific use case like the validation layer does, looks at the performance of the model across a number of executions, right? So it's a more general layer. For example, an example of how to use LLMs via Airflow could be like the generation of technical commentary, right? So there's this technical commentary that needs to be generated by analysts on a recurrent basis, for example, monthly, to perform variance analysis. And it's sometimes very tedious and time-consuming for analysts having to repeat the same process, let's say month on month, for example. So what LLM programmatic LLM workflow allow us to do is to actually collect data and then expose this data to a large language model, and the large language model will then, following some instructions, generate commentary, for example, right? But again, the problem with LLM output is that it's not idempotent, right? Like with standard Python pipelines, and is pluripotent on the other side and can hallucinate, even though we see hallucination less and less recently with more advanced models. But still, being it pluripotent means that we need to be much more strict in terms of applying validation layers and observability and evaluation.
Yeah, totally. I think that non-idempotent or non-deterministic aspect of working with these pipelines is maybe one of the hardest pieces, as I've seen, lots of companies try to implement these workflows with Airflow. It always makes me think of the number of times that I've told people that a best practice is designing your Airflow DAG so that they are idempotent. And as you said, in this case, you really can't. And that's a big challenge. I'm curious if you think that when taking a lot of care to build in some guardrails around that, as you have, do you think that solves the issue or at least mostly solves the issue? Like, can you get around that non-deterministic aspect of it with enough sort of proper pipeline design and monitoring and observability?
Actually, I think we can in practice by applying this multi-layer validation, as well as let's say, because at the end of the day, what we are doing, Kenton, is passing some data that is our source of truth to, let's say, an LLM, right? So we need to verify whether the LLM is coming back with something sensible and something that can be, that can be verified by actually querying the source of truth data. And that can be implemented programmatically. So actually, despite the commentary wording can be slightly different from execution to execution, the directionality of like the variance analysis, for example, and the data, like the actual figures and percentages being used to build a commentary, need to match perfectly, and that can be validated. And more recently, we also started thinking about having agents validating agents, so having like a second agent validating the output of an initial LLM call, and also implementing a way to, let's say, how agents are also used for CI/CD checks to validate whether, your PR, the code that you included in the last commit is valid or includes bugs, right? Having also a CI/CD check where an agent is checking the suggestion recommended by the initial agent is something that we are, really pushing to implement internally. So my answer in not so short is yes, with due care, everything can be actually replicated programmatically and tested.
I think that's a great perspective. And as maybe a follow-up to that discussion on the reliability of these pipelines, other than the idempotency aspect, is there anything that you have seen related to orchestrating AI-enabled workflows that differs from kind of more traditional Airflow use cases like batch ETL, in terms of the repeatability and monitoring aspect?
I mean, I would say mainly the way evaluation and validation is performed, as we said. But in terms of, let's say, building the pipeline itself, I would say the surface of let's say how advanced your agentic application can be can differ quite a lot from use case to use case. For example, there might be an AI-enabled workflow that is just running a single call to an LLM, and in that case, a very well written prompt with a good validation layer on top can do the job and let's say get outputs close to idempotency. Whereas there are some other cases that can still be orchestrated via Airflow, where fully fledged agents are used with a long graph, and then the agent is let's say left on sort of on its own. And can use leverage different tools. And in that case, let's say there's much more room for error. So I would say let's start small when trying for the first time, like to work with this AI-enabled workflow, and then let's build from there more complex agents.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you for going through that. This has been
Yeah.
really insightful, and I'd love to hear about your experience in these areas. I think that's a good place to transition to my standard final question for all of my guests
Yeah.
is, what would you most like to see from the Airflow project in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually really keen to see and to let's say all the advancements recently after the 2025 summit, and I'm really keen to to see Airflow becoming more and more a platform also for agentic workflows and having some sort of native code to let's say implement validation and also to remove boilerplate code, so to standardize a little bit more the way agents are orchestrated. And also, like I would say a bottleneck for us internally has always been how we test Airflow locally. And with a lot of iteration, we managed to get to, let's say, a very strong and solid local environment. But this is not always easy if you are not an engineer. So if you have no if you have not like an advanced knowledge about the components behind Airflow. So making local development easier and closer to production is always something that I think there's quite a lot of work that can be done. I would like to see how it goes in the future.
Definitely. I think those are both great answers and very timely. Well,
Yeah.
Antonella, this has been a really great conversation. Really appreciate you sharing all of your experience. Just to close this out, what is the best way for folks to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there and very keen to respond to all your questions, either about this podcast or any other, let's say, topic related to data and analytics engineering. And also, make sure if you like what we discussed, feel free to share our to check our career page on the WISE website. And there are a lot of roles open in engineering and analytics engineering. And again, Kenton, thanks for having me and thanks for the invite.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. We will throw links to those things in the show notes so people can access them. Yeah, thank you again. This has been great.
Thank you for listening to the Data Flowcast. Check the show notes for links to everything mentioned today. If you're enjoying the podcast, subscribe so you never miss an episode. And leave us a 5-star review.